welcome to the big show. Yes, we're back. We've done two shows running. Two shows in 2 weeks. I think it might be three, actually. How amazing is that? But we're not doing one next week because we're doing a live show next week because me and Paul Wheatley will be at Macworld. I think we've mentioned it. But at the time that the big show is on, the live show, that's 8 p.m. on Thursday, we will be out on the show floor and we'll be going with the chat room and tell us. We'll have a live Google Hangout-y type thing going on. We'll post a link as to where you can get hold of it. And you go in our chat room, which is an IRC chat room, irc.deekshed.net, hashtag British Tech Network, and you can control us. So there you go. We'll have a great time. Absolutely fantastic time. And we'll go and show you what's going on at Macworld next week. And if you're a big show listener, you probably don't give a toss, but it's the big show time, so listen up. Joining me to discuss the week in tech, absolutely fantastic panel. Wonderful bunch of guys. Here we go. Top left, Streaks back. How you doing, bud?
I'm pretty okay, I must say.
Pretty okay.
Yeah, I'm full of coffee right now, so I'm kind of bouncing off all over the place in my mind, but I'm managing to keep my body stationary for the time being.
Excellent, man. And what's been happening in Streak World this week?
I am wrapping up something that I've been working on for a little while.
You said you had an announcement.
Yes, it is launching, finally, my little secret project. It is a book of sorts.
Show us your secret project.
Indeed. It'll be up with more information on my website a bit later, after the podcast, and this is done tonight. I shall put down more information there. And hopefully and the some website, people will be interested.
And the website is?
That'll be streakmachine.com.
There we go.
Yes.
You'll be able to find out what Streak's been working on.
Mm.
And is it available in the bookstore, Apple bookstore? Or?
Actually, I've decided to take a step outside all the bookstores, and it's through a system known as Gumroad, which allows you to publish whatever you want, pretty much.
Okay, so is it a price or is it a free thing?
There will be a price. It won't be much, though, compared to what other things in this world cost, I would say.
Good man. Well, there you go. Streak's been around the network. He's blogged an awful lot for us as well. So if you've got whatever it costs, give him a couple of quid because he deserves it. He's a fine chap. Well done,
mate.
Thank
you very much.
Congratulations on your publishing debut.
Yes, thank you.
Wish I had the guts to do one on photography, but I haven't got time.
Time is a very big factor, I must admit.
I can imagine, mate. Next to him, join us after a wee absence, is Jeffrey Gamet. How's it going, bud?
It's going well. Sorry, I had to miss last week.
But, no, it's okay. We realized you hadn't done your Macworld presentation yet.
Yeah, well, yeah, there was that. By the way, I'm really looking forward to getting to hang out together at Macworld.
This is the thing. I mean, we've had this with the Bash, you see, for the last couple of years, and people just turn up at the Bash. And like Gaz turned up at the Bash last week and sat next to me in the curry house, and there was no this shaking hands and going, pleased to meet you, I'm Ewan. It's just like, hello, mate. So I know you already, you know? If you shake your hand and say please to me, I'll give you a slap.
Oh, no.
We're up to hugging already,
there
dude.
There will be a big hug.
Yeah, there'll be man hugs already, yeah, definitely. And you've got a present for me, you say?
I do.
Is there anything I can bring in return? Anything quintessentially British that you haven't had or need? Marmite?
I'll think about it.
I can bring you Marmite.
I don't even know if I can eat that. Is there dairy in it?
Oh, hell no. Dairy would mean that bacteria would live in it.
Oh, well, then maybe I can try that.
Nothing lives in Marmite. Marmite never goes off. The sell-by date on Marmite is probably the sun will burn out before the Marmite goes off.
Ah, good to know.
It's good stuff. And it's a byproduct of brewing.
No kidding.
It's the leftover yeast. You're going to hate it, but I've never met an American yet that likes Marmite. It's an acquired taste, mate, but the advertising campaign they have in the UK is you either love it or hate it, and it really is that. People are either just absolutely crown over it or they're violently sick by it. There's no in-betweens. There's no like.
Sounds exciting.
Oh, you got to try it. I'll bring you some over. There'll be some in. I've got to find a little tiny one from like a hotel Marmite type thing. The little tiny jobs, the catering ones, because I can smuggle that over, and then they won't do me for food importation licensing disagreements and stuff. So there we go. Next to him, Gazmaz, how's it going, bud?
Good, thank you. And we are a Marmite household, I have to admit.
Yeah, see, there you go. You've got to be in we're a Marmite household as well. But Ellis grew up on it and loves it, but Bryony doesn't eat it. She won't touch the stuff.
Oh, dear. Well, that's a disaster. Yeah. But so, yes, Jeff, you'll love it. You'll love it, absolutely.
Yeah. No, you won't. I mean, that's not...
He will.
There's no guarantees, man.
He will.
I get it. So you and you're bringing this over because you hate me.
No. I'm bringing it over because you could have the kudos of being the first American to ever like Marmite.
Okay, there is that.
Yeah, it's an acquired taste, but if you stick with it, Jeff.
Yeah. You know, anything that starts with "it's an acquired taste" never ends well.
The only other
thing you could take over Ewan is black pudding, of course.
Oh, now actually, I can do black pudding definitely.
Black pudding.
Go on.
That's a beef based thing, right?
Kind of.
If it has cow in it, I can't eat it.
No, it's more. What, you a Hindu or something?
No, I actually can't digest anything that comes from a cow.
Well, no, it's pork based, and it's actually blood.
How exciting! I can do
blood
pork.
And fat.
Yeah,
you can do pork. There you go. Just don't tell your rabbi. How did the cup final thing or the cup?
Superb, absolutely superb.
You were all mic'd up and stuff.
Yeah. Three of us went up. We went up early so we could see the England game. The England game finished, and then we went out to the pitch. And we were all mic'd up, got the radio mics, and it went well.
England game was finished 10 minutes in, dude.
Well, yeah, but you know, you still got to watch it, haven't you? And then obviously we finished the game and then came in and after all the presentations, et cetera, and watched the France Ireland game. So a few beers were drunk and.
Were you driving?
Unfortunately, I was, yes.
Oh, bad luck, dude.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes it happens like that.
But, I've now got
four owing to me.
Right.
And I will take advantage of those either this season or next season, yeah.
Excellent. And last but by no means least, Righty.
Hello, mate. How are you?
What's life been like in the Broads?
It's been all right. Libya didn't go too well last week after we spoke last Thursday, unfortunately.
You got the show title.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, thank you very much. But yeah, no, after all that work, it actually didn't go very well at all.
Is that because the connection failed or because he failed?
No, that's because we agreed a location with a good connection and the next day he decided to go somewhere completely different.
Oh, what an arse.
And can we throw Bovril into the mix if we're talking about Marmite?
Bovril's beef, definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Jeff,
can't beat a good meat drink.
Jeff's going to have enough problems digesting that week as it is without trying to get Marmite or trying to get beef out of his system. If he says he can't digest it, I mean, I'm working on assumptions here, but if he can't digest it, it means it's got to go somewhere sometime.
Liquid beef is all right, though, isn't it?
When did you actually sit down and think that a liquidised cow was a good thing?
I've got a jar in the kitchen.
Hell?
I'll get you one now.
Wait, are you serious? You have liquid cow. Yeah. I can only imagine how that's made. Well, and I have a very vivid imagination.
Top Gear did it with a V8.
We take cows, we put them in blenders, and that's Bovril. There you go.
Is that some kind of a Willard Blend spin-off?
Yes, it is, absolutely. Yeah, we use there's a bigger version of that. Fits a whole cow. That's right. We have to cut the hooves off first. Obviously. Well,
of course, that makes
sense.
And
take the teeth out.
But, well, that'll mess up the blades if you leave the hooves on.
Yeah. But that's the way it's done. Big blender, cow in, cow gone.
I have so much to learn. I really need to go over there for a while and like study all the things you have.
Warm liquidized cow. They did go with that as the first title, but the sales weren't good.
Here we have the traditional like Christmas ham. The original name was pig butt, and that didn't sell so well either. So yeah,
I like the chat room.
Beef shake.
That's not right.
there's something about that that's just got it. Beef shake just lines up with masturbation somehow, and I don't know how, but it's just no. The Week in Tech. Who's got a story for us? Who's going to start us off with what's happened in the world of bits and bytes?
Shall I go then?
You go, right, you boy. Thank God. Okay. I thought it was going to be a big silence there. Jesus.
I'll just get it out there. I think Microsoft have got it finally. I think they've worked it out.
Go on.
After all this time, maybe it's like Satya Nadella, you know, new CEO and all that sort of thing. But it was just a story I saw on The Verge this week is three of the top 10 apps in the Mac App Store were Microsoft apps. It's OneNote, OneDrive, and Microsoft Remote Desktop. And then everyone started talking about, I don't know if they've leaked it or anything, but obviously Office for iPad is finally coming. And it's just interesting that are Microsoft finally, with Windows 8 not really being what they want it to be, finally realizing that their core demographic isn't using their operating system, but actually using their services. So obviously, Satya Nadella is a cloud kind of guy. So your top two apps are OneDrive and OneNote, which are cloud apps. It's just interesting that they're kind of, because I think OneDrive for the Mac went straight to the top of the charts. So it's obviously very popular. I've used it on my Mac.
Didn't they give away some free space as well, though, if you downloaded
it? Well, they changed their pricing model.
Yeah.
So it's a free service now.
Yeah. Right. And it might be a lot to do with, obviously, what we talked about last week with Google dropping their prices. But it's just very interesting that kind of Mac owners are kind of embracing the kind of the Microsoft services. I don't know if it's because they're trapped in work and all that sort of thing, but... You know, has Microsoft finally realized that just selling their services on their operating system isn't the way to go? And actually to sell it on Apple, on Macs and iOS and Android is the way to go. Yeah, have they finally seen the light? And if they haven't, they really should.
Well, I mean, seen the light again. That's where they started, like back in the late 70s and early 80s, now selling stuff on Apple hardware.
Yeah, but it shows that people actually want it. As well, you know, people are downloading it. So, you know, if that was a kind of toe in the water kind of thing, it's proved that, you know, people out there do want some of the Microsoft services but aren't using Windows.
Now, I've got it's free. So it's the top app download, which is free. So let's just put that in context. It's against, I mean, if you look at other stuff here, it's against stuff that's paid for applications. So, you know, it's doing well. Great. Fantastic. Well done, Microsoft. Now, OneNote. I used OneNote, I've got to go back 10 years probably to the last time I used OneNote, I think, or maybe 8 years, something like that. And when I used it, I thought it was a formidable application because you could basically do anything you want. You could make a mind map, you could draw lines, you could draw boxes, you can do spreadsheets in it, you could do tables in it, you had text box, and it was absolutely superb. Mm-hmm. Now, I downloaded Microsoft OneNote when it popped up the other night on the feeds, and that's not it. It's great. Don't get me wrong. It's a good note-taking application, and you can sit and type in a text box, and you can highlight stuff, but there's no drawing, there's no lines, there's no mind mapping, there's no tables, there's no spreadsheets, and that was always there before. You could always do calculations, and it had a little calculator function that was built in, and none of that's there. And there's a bit of me sitting thinking, well, okay, well done, Microsoft, for giving this away free of charge. And yes, Evernote's going to be quaking in their boots a little bit because you can drag in pictures and all that kind of stuff and make your own stuff up for dates and sheets and that kind of thing. But this isn't the application that I was wired by and have always thought I'd really like that on OS X.
No, but at the end of the day, it's kind of like the new version of iWork, isn't it? Because you've said yourself that the new version of... pages and that sort of thing lacks a lot of things in the old version. They're adding things back in.
So, story,
like say, a toe in the water kind of thing, they might add more things to it when they get the feedback.
But doesn't the irony of that astound you, Paul, that you're talking about an application from Microsoft and comparing it to a paid application which is bulked and heavily hacked down from Apple? I would rather have paid a fiver and got the OneNote I remember.
Yeah.
And they'd still have been number one.
Yeah, but then you take OneNote out of the equation.
Go on, Jeff. You have a stab here.
Okay. Is OneNote on Windows what you remember? So what they've given the Apple camp is a stripped down version of OneNote. Is that right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I recall this is one of those fantasies. I'm probably looking back through rose-tinted spectacles at what OneNote once was, and everyone will probably sit and correct me and go, no, Jesus Christ, it was a piece of crap. But I remember it doing an awful lot more than the OneNote I downloaded the other day. So, yeah, it's probably stripped down, I would say.
But then the other thing that I was going to say, if you take OneNote out of the equation, the other two apps, which are OneDrive, there's obviously a lot of Apple users who are signed up for that service as well. And obviously the other app is the remote desktop to connect to Windows. So it's kind of like, obviously I at work, I'm a kind of a completely almost Windows world and I'm a Apple user at home. But it's giving everyone that kind of cross-platform kind of feel, isn't it? So they are kind of crossing over.
Is that just spreading them a bit thin, though?
Yeah, but obviously, you know, the thing with Office and the announcement of, you know, I don't know, because a lot of people are talking, I haven't seen any official confirmation, but they're talking about, you know, Office for iPad is like nearly here. And is that the new strategy of Microsoft, is that they'll move into the services more than they'll move into pushing things out of their own operating system? Because they've got some services that are really good. SkyDrive's really good. You know, I actually pay them money to use it. Do they realise that it's not just their own operating system is where they're going to sell these services? They've got to sell them everywhere else as well. And if that is their strategy, it's a very good strategy.
But they haven't sold OneDrive and they haven't sold Microsoft OneNote.
No, but it's
I would have bought it. That's the thing. I'm a sale that would have. I was gagging to give them money.
Yeah.
Minus 30% for Apple.
Yeah, exactly. But I think they realise that, you know, they just can't just keep everything exclusive to Windows. And I think that's a really powerful message if they aren't going to be exclusive to Windows and are going to give service to other operating systems. Well, that really could...
Exclusivity works fine when you're winning.
Yeah.
There's the point. And you're not winning, I'm afraid, Microsoft. Yeah, you're selling loads of OS, but you're getting a lot of grief over it in the press and you're the guy that everyone wants to hate, unfairly in a lot of cases, I have to say. I'm probably going to get hate mail from that from the Windows users, even so. But I think, you know, you had the chance, you could have actually put an application out that would have generated your income and that people would have shouted about and said, this is really great, it's better than anything else that I've got for note-taking process. And you haven't. You've put something out that's barely passable as beating Evernote.
Yeah. The writing's on the wall in the fact that they're talking about Office. It's too late for Office because the one thing at work where people go, right, I need something to, I can edit Office documents. And there are so many applications out there that do that. So if they'd got there more quickly, they could have owned that space, couldn't they?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't want to get there more quickly because they wanted Office to be the draw to get people to buy Windows tablets and the Surface.
And yet they're putting it on iPad ahead of the Surface.
Well, I think they see the writing on the wall.
Mm. So this is a desperation thing more than a new direction then?
Desperation sounds a bit...
I wouldn't call it desperation. Yeah. I would call it realization and acceptance on some level of what the mobile market is. And right now, it's an Apple game.
There's a bit of me thinks that is there an in-app purchase coming? Is there a development process? I was talking to John Atkinson on Twitter early in the week when it first came out. And is it a toe in the door that says, right, here's OneNote. Wow, everyone's bought OneNote. Well, actually, do you remember all that stuff it used to do? You can now get an in-app purchase. And version 2 is going to have in-app purchase that allows you to do all the stuff that you did before. That would be fantastic. I'd still pay for it, but I would have paid for it straight off the bat. But maybe that's their idea of you know, thin end of the wedge, if you like, in the market. Get people interested and then do the sale.
Sounds likely. Well, that's all I think. It could also be that they're now really trying to show that, yeah, this is Microsoft. Under new management, we do things differently now. And could work for them.
They can't have done this just from Nadella, though. This must have been in the pipeline.
This has been in the pipeline for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, Steve Ballmer was even talking about Office on the iPad. So, yeah, this isn't something new.
Steve tossing windows, chairs out of windows, Bonner.
What a guy.
I know the jumping up and down bit. When did he toss chairs?
He got very upset over Google at some point in the last couple of years, and he threw a window through a chair through a window. And
he threw a window through a Windows.
No, he threw a window through the window. That would be nice. No, but he threw a chair. I'm high on coffee. I can't speak. And he freaked everybody out in the meeting quite a bit.
Imitating art. Limiting art. There we go.
You know, I don't care who you are. Even if you're the CEO of Microsoft, if you throw a temper tantrum and toss a chair through a window, I will fire your ass.
Yeah.
It was going to fire.
I think he scared some people that time, so they kind of backed off, I guess.
Yeah, that's lame. The board should have said, you know what, Steve, you don't even get severance. Just take your freaky ass out. You're gone. Oh, and you're paying for the window.
Yes.
This is why I'm not allowed to be on any board of directors.
Yeah, you just sack everyone, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. I have no tolerance for people like that.
I saw you bang the vending machine the other day when it didn't give you your sweets. You're at.
Oh, yeah, I fired that machine.
Don't want to treat Skittles that way.
See? It's like you know me.
Here's a picture of the OneNote preferences. I don't actually... Spelling? You can check your spelling. That's useful. View. Zoom. Feedback. I wrote back to them saying, where's the rest of it?
So what have you got there? I've got OneNote 2013 in front of me. So what options have you got there? Oh,
okay. I've had a coughing fit. I'm sorry. On preferences.
Yeah, okay.
It's nothing.
Yeah, I have a fair bit more of that on the PC version.
And there was let's hope that they will... do an Apple there and just add tons of functions in.
There's no drawer tools.
In a few weeks.
No drawer tools or anything like that. I can't talk. Jesus.
What you said there, Ewan, I mean, I've heard it from so many other people too. I don't remember using OneNote back in the day, but so many other people have said exactly the same thing that you said. It was an awesome tool and had all these great features, and it was such flexibility in it. And if it is anywhere near that, I would be very interested in it. It doesn't matter who made it and for what platform. I would be very interested in getting that app.
Well, I used it when I was doing my law degree. On a Windows machine that I bought, a little cheapy laptop just at the time. And it was fantastic because you'd start off and you could make a table and you could do key point content, something like that. And then you could draw another box with like an annotation of an exercise or a case. And you could draw an arrow from the case to the table. And it was just, it was brilliant.
Sounds like the concept they had, what was it named? The Courier. The thing that was only two videos, and then they were not going to make a product of it.
It's amazing.
You could basically do anything anywhere on the page, and that was it. That was the principle. So,
do you think the this mysterious iPad version of Office is just going to be severely limited them to make their products on their operating system look good?
Jeff saying yes.
I think it's going to be little more than an application shell around Office 365 with limited editing and content creation features, pretty much like what's on the iPhone, but I'm hoping I'm wrong. I hope that they release a killer product for the iPad.
Yeah, because we're paying good money. Where I work, we're paying good money for the kind of clone versions, like Docs to Go and all that sort of stuff. Because people, even though they have iPads, they still really want to edit Office documents. Yeah. And they're what, are they 2-3 years late now?
Yeah. Chat room. Sack says, Ewan, you can get all this stuff in Chrome extensions already anyway. So why have OneNote? I think there's a certain element of Chrome extensions, you just like, whether it's cloud or whether it's desktop, but... Yeah, I mean,
I heard a figure the other day that there are still 500 million XP machines out there. Now, if a lot of those users are using Office, even if a small percentage have iOS devices, including, or let's say, the iPad, Microsoft are still missing out because most of those users would buy the Microsoft package as soon as it came out. So, yeah, they are 2 or 3 years behind. They really should have had this in their plan a long, long time ago.
Well, I think it's probably been in the plan. This is what I don't believe, that Nadella's the person that's actually made this happen.
No.
It would have taken a lot longer than this.
There's not enough time for this to have happened because of him.
This isn't an easy port from one language to another with a bit of cocoa front end. It's more than that.
Well, it was Ballmer that said they wouldn't release a touch interface version of Office until they had the interface right.
Booker,
so maybe they finally have it right.
Booker in the chat room wants to lodge a vote for Office 2003 on Windows XP. Is that with a ribbon? I think it is, isn't it?
No, it's 2007 that went with the ribbon.
Yeah, that was the ribbon one, right?
I'm assuming 2003 still has Clippy.
Oh, yeah, but it doesn't. Can't you have Clippy as an option anyway?
Yeah, I think 2003 was the last one that actually included it.
I'm actually thinking that if those people on the XP machines finally upgrade to the latest version of Office through a Mac because of versions there, it might actually encourage them to go out and update their machine as well.
Mm.
Do you think that's what's at the heart of it?
Nah, well, they might be thinking that in the very depths of their...
No, I mean, here's a logical question. There's a point here. If in 2 months' time, 3 months' time, 5 months' time, 6 months' time, a year's time, there are still half a billion machines running XP, what kind of pressure is Microsoft going to feel to, through the back door, offer support to that and security upgrade? Because that's a lot of people to walk away from.
Yeah, we had this conversation before, haven't we? But obviously, at the point that 8th of April comes round, there's still going to be that many Windows XP machines out there, aren't there?
Word perfect and word star.
Oh. Good times.
Oh, man.
I got an
original version of HyperCard as well. In the box.
Ooh, HyperCard.
In the plastic.
So do I.
Never opened.
Oh, mine's been opened. Mine's been properly used.
Oh, well, there you go. See.
Is this where I'm supposed to be talking about Geos on a Commodore 64?
Yes.
Ah, cool.
And good times.
PageMaker.
Indeed.
Can't beat PageMaker.
Well,
I love PageMaker.
You just need a really big stick.
Yeah. Good story, mate. Good story. Who's next?
I'll jump in.
Go on, Gus.
I've been trying to look for a story which is related to something else, which is, I listened today to another podcast. Yes, slap my wrist, but no. it was from the Guardian Tech Weekly podcast. And they spoke to a guy called Jake Davis. Now, does anybody remember the name Jake Davis? You may know the name as Topiary. Hacktivist.
Topiary.
Topiary, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they had an interview with Jake Davis about what happened to him after he was pulled down to a London...
He was pulled in, wasn't he? After that, there was the big takedown thing around the Sony.
Lulzek.
That's it, Lulzek. He worked with Anonymous, and he was there was a few other activist groups that he was supposedly an associate with. But he was basically banned from the internet for 2 years. And I listened to this podcast, and I must recommend it to you to listen. Just have a listen to the hell that he went through after he was taken into a prison and then let out and then convicted of basically doing wrong on the internet and the way he got drawn into the dark side, as it were. Now, that's not really a current news story, and I noticed today that apparently – there's been lots of hack attacks on the world's net timekeepers. And apparently there's a massive effort at the moment to try and harden up the attacks which are going across the net's clocks timing. Timepieces or the servers which keep the clocks.
I hope they don't do it before I start flying around. Well, I'll miss a plane.
Well, no, Christ. Apparently they're actually, I think it's called the Protocol NTP. I'm not really big on this particular architect, this network architect, but it's a backdoor into doing denial of service attacks on servers, and there's a panic going on around the world to make sure that they get all of these servers updated and secured against these possible hacks. And that was kind of the story which I related back to the probably more interesting story of Jake Davis. Now I don't know which story you want me to hang on really from there, Ewan.
No, it was interesting that there's a quote here saying that his interview with Charles Arthur discusses his dramatic arrest and journey through the legal system. Finally, yep. Davis talks about his insight into the prison system for young men. I bet that was interesting.
Although, well, yeah, he was rather concerned because he went into I think it's Feltham, right. Young offenders. And obviously he was seeing lifers in there, as it were, people that had killed people. But he got a lot of kudos because he was trying to kick against the system, of course. He was rather concerned when he first went in as to how he would be received.
He's a good-looking lad as well.
And how he was going to survive, yes. There is that.
He was either going to come out with a law degree or a sore ass.
It's Shawshank Redemption again.
Now, what surprised me is this happened to him when he was 13 or 14.
Oh, bloody hell.
So he's basically lost all his schooling because he was he couldn't speak. What was incredible was some of the stories about the way he couldn't speak to anybody. And he tried when he came out, because there was still an order on him when he came out of prison, that he couldn't speak to certain people and that he couldn't have an internet connection. So he tried to get a phone contract. And they were really suspicious of him when he was saying, no, I just want text and phone. I cannot have any sort of data connection. And that also meant that he couldn't have an email address. So when people said, right, yeah, if he went for job interviews, you know, I'll email you. He said it went into all sorts of odd conversations when I said, no, I haven't got an email address. And he couldn't really go on to the fact that he was banned from the internet.
He's 22 now, but that surely wasn't that long ago. The LulzSec thing wasn't...
No, I think when he first got involved with it, he was 13 or 14.
Oh, right, okay. But then he got turned over a couple of weeks ago.
That's right. I think he still cannot speak to certain members of the group that he was involved with until July of this year. When, you know, if they make contact with him, he doesn't want to, but he can now finally even just talk to them via email or texting, whatever. Because if any of them have tried to contact him recently, or if anybody who has tried to talk to him and then admitted that they're part of the group that he belonged to, he's had to then kind of cut the conversation short. It's a really interesting interview, and I advise you go and listen to it.
Yeah, you've got to suggest as well. I'd be very surprised if there wasn't a huge issue around things like autism or the Asperger's.
Oh, yeah.
Spectrum and Asperger's with that kind of person. I mean, I know the Gary McKinnon thing. He was an Asperger's sufferer, and he just got obsessed with the idea of finding out about stuff. So,
yeah.
Piqued my interest there. I'm going to go and listen to that.
It's worth it.
Not really a discussion topic, is it?
But it's not. But that's why I was trying to find another hackery.
That's fine.
Did I really say hackery story?
So, no, go for it. I've read the Guardian article there just to start off with, and I've looked at a couple of and there's a lot here on Google search for news just talking about it.
Well, he's got a Wikipedia page as well, so, and it's interesting, but it's nice to actually hear his side of the story as well. Really good stuff. But it just goes to show how dangerous it can be out there. If you start getting involved and you're getting involved with the hacking side of the world.
Screaking Jeff, who's going?
Oh, I'll go.
Jeffrey.
Mine. But before hearing these two stories, I was thinking, wow, mine's really cool. And I'm like, oh, I kind of found a lame story.
No.
But it's still kind of cool. Okay. So here's what I found. And I'll drop a link in the chat room for everyone. It turns out some guys took a quadcopter drone with a GoPro on it and flew it into a volcano.
Oh, no, you might have some kudos here.
So, yeah, they have this awesome video of this active volcano with chunks of lava and rocks and ash and stuff just blowing up at the camera. And they were able to successfully fly around the volcano and recover their drone. So, score, which of course accounts for why they were able to have footage.
Oh, dear God. I've just looked at the second scene where there's a huge blast of ash and cinder gone straight up into the camera. And they're backing away with it, pussies.
Yeah. Yeah. If it was your drone and I was flying at you, and I would have kept it right in there.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
I've got your back.
This is pure molten lava. I mean, they're all red. It's all glowing on the video. And there's a lot of eruptions. Where was the volcano?
I'm not even sure where the volcano was. I was just so taken in by how cool the footage was that, I didn't bother to find out where it is.
As far as I'm aware, in Europe, you're limited to 500 meters line of sight. So all I can think is they've got a system, because I mean the 2.4 gigahertz system will only do that kind of range. They'd have had to have been in 1.3 gigahertz or something to get anywhere near this thing without getting themselves killed. But yeah, they've got some amazing shots.
Or they got incredibly lucky.
Amazing shots.
Yeah, it's really cool to see what's happening inside that active volcano. And in a way that the only other way we would see that would be followed by the thought of, and I'm going to die.
Yeah. It's at io9.com, and it is very, very good. Very, very good. Amazing footage. Sean O'Callaghan and others offers a different view of just how powerful volcanic eruptions can look from directly above. Pretty incredible. He says that his drone, a Phantom, survived its brush with the volcano. So if it's a Phantom, it's running on 2.4 gigahertz, I'd say, probably. So I find that even more surprising.
So that means they were probably standing right on the rim of the volcano.
Well, he's got to be within half a kilometre, a third of a mile.
So that they were pretty much right there in the volcano themselves.
Yeah, they were screwed if anything had gone off. Absolutely screwed.
But they got us some kick-ass video.
They sure did. Again, fantastic story. Not much to discuss, really, but fantastic story.
Yeah, amazing. It's just footage. A fun one to share.
It is. They're very good. If you haven't got the video podcast there, you should go and have a look at that. io9.com. Watch a volcano eruption up close as filmed by a drone is the title. But I'm sure you'll find that pretty quickly. It's on YouTube as well. Bloody good. Very, very good. Streak, what have you got for us, sir?
Well, I earlier this week had to check my almanac to make sure that it was indeed 2014 and not 1994, because apparently virtual reality, it's back, and Sony just unveiled some new doohickey at the Game Developer Conference called Project Morpheus, ominous as it sounds.
Sorry for laughing, but that was one of the stories I was going to use, so I'm glad I didn't use it. Well done, Street.
No problemo. Oh, I had a few backups as well. But virtual reality, apparently, it's a thing again. And now Sony, pretty big name, is in on the whole thing. And this will apparently become a product. It's got the usual Sony industrial design and flair and stuff. So who knows? Maybe they'll have more luck this time.
It's really going to get you laid.
they're competing against the Oculus Rift, aren't they, with that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's got the PlayStation moniker on the side here as well, which is a big giveaway, isn't it?
Oh yeah,
I think it can only be linked up to that at the moment.
The Japanese giants have yet to announce a price or launch date.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like CES. No price, no death.
There is. Street, did you find that on BBC? Because the BBC actually did a quick showing of that, I did a video, and they showed you some of the video as this guy using it, and some of the video of him in there as well, and showing you what you saw. And it, I must admit, it was pretty awesome.
I picked it up from Engadget, but I didn't see the BBC article, I'm afraid.
I'll put it in the showroom, in the chat room now.
Do it, definitely. Yeah, like I said, I mean, it feels like, you know, all the things that are old are new again, now that we have a bit better technology. And I'm just wondering, is there some kind of a real second coming of virtual reality as we knew it? Now, will this be something? I don't know. I'm a bit skeptical right now, even with these... Of course, naturally, way better technologies we have now.
Oh, do you remember there used to be a thing that sat on top of it? They were about £250, and there were a set of glasses that you put on, and you sat a thing on top of your monitor, and then you just pulled your monitor really close, and it gave you like a 3D come VR kind of type experience. But you had to keep line of sight with the thing on top of the monitor, which was quite difficult. But, I mean, VR really has died a death, because I remember the great big goggles that you used to get. And didn't Atari do a great big set of goggles that was going to save Atari? It was going to be the big thing, and that never went anywhere either. So, I don't know.
I mean, we're talking about stuff from the same era that produced the Virtual Boy of all horrible things in the world. The device from Nintendo that flopped harder than hard and gave you headaches as you used it.
I remember doing a driving thing when I'm going back 20 years plus now. But it was a driving thing. You sat and you had a big thing on your head, and you turned around, and you could turn around. But it was all the hands were just wireframe, or they were you know, they looked like cardboard box fingers and hands, just on a steering wheel. And you.
So it was all Minecraft.
It was like Minecraft. It was actually Minecraft's probably a bit sophisticated for what I actually saw. But I'm going back to the 90s, you know, early 90s. Yeah. As the question's got to beg, I mean, all of these things are great, fantastic, well done, but it's got to beg whether there's a future for VR or not, just as much as whether there's a future for 3D or not. Is there?
Not if you've got to wear those sorts of headsets.
You're never going to get away from virtualization without being immersed in something, whether it's a room or whether it's a headset that projects the equivalent of an 85-inch television or something, so...
I like the idea of a room so that you're not isolated. You can go into the room like a holodeck, go in with someone else or a group of people, and have a virtual immersive environment.
Yep.
Well, I haven't signed an NDA, so I suppose I there's no way I can't talk about it. But I'm going to make a film for someone soon, and what they've done is created rooms where they can send engineers, and the engineers can deal with issues live, if you like, on virtual screens around. So effectively, there's a bit of jiggery-pokery with the curves in the corners, but they go into a full room. There is projectors above which make four screens around them. They're in an immersed environment. There is a ball that they can walk on, which makes them move through the environment which it interacts with. And then they can see things, and they can react to things, and they can go over and touch things and do things. And it's a training mechanism that's realistic. I haven't worked out how I'm going to get a picture of that yet, but I'm about to make that, and I won't say the firm. But I mean, that's the virtual reality, where you've got an immersed environment rather than just putting on a headset, because the headset doesn't give you the kind of same sense of movement, perhaps, that you'd get from... a room.
No, well, this guy on the Sony glasses on the BBC website, he did say that going underwater, and he said as he was going down, it did make him feel sick, and that's the problem. It's the motion that without your body actually moving in that direction, I think the brain starts to struggle.
Yeah, it's your ear canals. Your ear canals deal with your balance. You've got cilia in the inner ear. That as the fluid changes in the semicircular canals, it actually makes you, it lets you know, your brain know that you're actually moving into what degree. It's where your balance comes from.
Yeah. Doesn't your rear always
get that disparity? There was a program a few years ago about how to stop sailors who were in cabins from feeling seasick through heavy seas. And all they did, it was a really brilliant idea, was they took the lamp stand and put it on a free rotating gimbal. So it was evenly balanced, and if everything was level, this thing was level. But as the ship pitched, the lampshade will always go back to level. So what it meant was there was an artificial horizon created by the shadow of the lamp in the room. And the shadow of the lamp would create this horizon, which would move, and it would make them feel like they were moving, and they'd see something moving at the same time. Seasickness, gone.
Fascinating.
That's brilliant.
It is. I was very impressed with that. I must have seen that 15 years ago. I think it was on Tomorrow's World.
Okay.
Blast from the past.
Batwench has put a link to some porn in the room, which, thank you, Batwench, that's very kind. I'm guessing it's a VR thing, and I'm going to click the link because I just can't not.
A show without porn from Batwench.
Exactly.
Batwench,
you're real. Get help. The future of porn is facing a critical challenge to its continued existence in Los Angeles. More than 2,000 inch members will gather this. I'm not clicking any further. Motion control porn is almost here. Porn may get a lot more hands-on. Oh, good.
Yeah.
I don't know what they mean.
So here we go. Big question. Is a headset VR system ever going to catch on, regardless of price?
No.
One for no?
Well, the fact that 3D hasn't caught on, this, I think they're just going over old ground to try and get something, but no, it won't.
No, two for no. Mm-hmm.
I'm leaning towards no myself too there.
Three for no.
Judging just from, like we said, what 3D TVs have done so far. That's it came, fad, gone.
That's not fair on Wrighty now, because he's going to feel like he doesn't, even if he wants to say yes, he can't, because all his mates have deafed him otherwise.
Oh, God.
What are you saying, Wrighty?
He wants to say yes.
Right, he's on mute. That's why he's been quiet the last few minutes.
Sorry.
I thought you'd been a bit quiet, dude.
So there's been some reports this week that they're adding controls to the Oculus Rift and things, so you get that kind of holodeck experience. But, well, I've been on mute and been on my computer. There's actually a thing called projectholodeck.com.
We're talking about cutting-edge VR and you've been on a Newton.
No, on mute.
Oh, on mute, sorry, man.
On mute, on a Newton. Well, I can dig one out. But there's a thing called projectholodeck.com where they're actually adding, it's kind of using tech that's already out there, but they're adding the motion so you can actually walk around, so you get that kind of holodeck feel. I think at the moment when you look at virtual reality, it's sitting in a chair and looking around and going, oh, yeah, it looks all right, I can look behind me. And in the 90s, you had those big, kind of thing in the arcade you sit in and you can look behind you, that looked great. But if you had the actual motion of actually walking forward and walking side and all that sort of thing, if they got that motion into it, I think it could work. All but at the moment, it's not there yet.
Based on Batwench's last link, all I heard there was Hollow Dick.
Hollow Dick.
And that will sell.
Yeah.
there's your show title.
The Hollow Dick Show.
Paulum's holodeck. Holodeck, holodeck.
Almost sounds
holodeck.
Normal, doesn't it?
Okay. Holodeck, holodeck, hello.
That when she's telling my son to speak to me after the show. What the hell's that about? We were in the car the other day. And he said, I said, what do you want to talk about? He said, sex. Okay, son, go on. How do you have sex if you don't want to have a baby?
There's a Norfolk answer to that, but I can't broadcast it.
Anything else, son? No? Oh, man. I wish they hadn't started sex education lessons for him at 10. That's just, I got how many years of this? Well, hopefully I've got loads of years of talking about it anyway.
Well, now that he knows, it's for the rest of your life.
The wife said to me, how did you deal with that? I said I deflected the subject by moving on to masturbation.
good dad.
Right, my story is a humdinger. I got this from Anders. If you're listening to Andy, thank you very much, Andy Bourne. If the Attorney General Brandis gets his way in Australia, in the process of revising Australia's Telecoms Interception Act, users and providers of VPNs and other encrypted services will be, by law, required to decrypt government-intercepted data. Because sophisticated criminals and terrorists, New Zealand already has a similar law, and the Telecommunications Interception and Computer Security Act apparently large internet service providers such as Microsoft and Facebook will not be exempt from TIXA and must facilitate the interception of their traffic. So we've gone beyond just a bit of snooping now, just a bit of backdoor stuff that Snowden can out, and we're up to the stage of fact that it will be enshrined in law that every company has to leave a backdoor, has to allow for a decryption of all communications that go backwards and forwards through the net through Australia.
That's horrible. Kind of,
that's a holy shit story.
It kind of reminds me of this book that came out a while back. What was it? No, what, some year? 1984, I think?
Yeah, there we go.
Sounds familiar? This is starting to be... Yeah, a little bit more than just uncomfortable. This is starting to be really creepy.
You know, I can see if countries enact laws like that, where you'll end up with what I'll call pirate internet, sort of like pirate radio, but pirate internet, where you have these off the regular grid internet services that connect you back out to the rest of the world and bypass the systems that are in compliance with the government snooping laws.
But I mean, going back to the fundamentals here of the structure, it's all very well talking about stuff on the web, but actually the internet is the computer system that's controlled by governments anyway. So you can't exist without being on that system. The only way around it is if you launch your own satellite system or your own network of computers that bypass that system entirely, which at the moment none of these do as far as I'm aware.
Not as far as I'm aware, but I can see where that would be an incentive for people to come up with a way to work around the current internet system.
Yeah,
theoretically, you could have something like a mesh network, and I've been thinking a bit about this, and you could, in theory, propagate it via, say, smartphones and tablets, because those move around a lot anyway, but yeah, still on the theoretical plane. A mesh dark net.
I mean, it's an interesting concept of the fact that you've just got this idea of the fact that we had a little quiet system, we were quite happily just tapping away at stuff, and no one knew about it. We were doing our job, if you like, in inverted commas, but now you've created a bit of a ruckus. Oh, no, you've ruined it for yourself, kids. Because now we're going to put it in law, and bollocks, we don't give a shit what you think. I mean, Windrider in the chat room says he's an arse. So... there you go. He obviously has a low opinion of this guy already. But, I mean, I got this off Slashdot, and the link from Anders was off Slashdot. And I know there's a couple of stories came up on Slashdot, and I wouldn't always say that... I don't mean to be unkind to Slashdot, because they've got some fantastic stuff on there. But there's sometimes, where, especially when you get an anonymous post, where the due diligence possibly hasn't been done properly. But as far as I can see, this looks to be a genuine story. And it scares the shit out of me. Because every government's going to follow
them. I was listening to Security Now earlier today, though, and he was talking. Steve, what's his surname now? Steve
Gibson.
Gibson. That's it. And he was talking how impressed he was with the way Apple have now secured the iPhone. Now, the older iPhones are not as secure as the latest version, and he was really impressed with the fact that even Apple have now put in place a procedure which stops them from being able to intercept and look and read and decipher any of the messages or traffic that you put out there. So if that's the case that, you know, even the owner of the product can't do it, then that's going to negate this process anyway, isn't it?
No, because according to this, the companies are going to be forced to provide the access.
Yeah, in where at the moment we're talking Australia.
Yeah,
yeah. So if it's not an Australian company, how are they going to do that?
They're going to restrain trade. You will not be able to buy a Mac. You will not be able to use software. You will have no access to iTunes.
But well, that's really good business sense, Australia.
Oh, they've done it before. I mean, they're
struggling at the moment. I mean,
they tackled price hiking by just banning products. And they won because of they banned the products. It's a huge leverage, Gaz.
It may be a huge leverage, but I tell you what, prices in Australia are still expensive. If you ask anyone over there,
Well, they're better than they used to be, and you've still got 5 million people there who are in the predominance fairly affluent in global economic terms. And they're spending money, and companies do shit themselves when 5 million people in an affluent country stop buying.
Well, possibly, but I'm not sure that Apple would do that. I'm not sure that they would. They'd say, okay, fine. You know, they're big enough and ugly enough to, you know, forget it. And I think a lot of other companies would as well.
I could see lawsuits coming out of this, meaning companies like Apple file lawsuits against the governments to get the laws changed.
Where's the criminal breach, though, Jeff?
It would be a civil case, not a criminal case.
Well, okay, but where's the civil breach? Where's the breach against a government controlling access to a market? I mean, there's...
Well, that's
they
where
they can control importation, absolutely, can't they?
They can.
Yeah.
And, and I'm assuming
they can do
that while I have played an attorney, someone who actually is an attorney would be able to figure that one out.
Yeah, no, I know we're just postulating them from a fairly minor point of knowledge. But I'm just saying, you know, you're talking about importation. And if you're talking about importation, every country has a right to limit its importation. And it is over and above any kind of idea of trade agreements or natural laws that may exist for product free markets. If they are an isolated community economically, they can control what is sold. I mean, if you're in a country that's banned Cuban cigars for 60 years.
And you can get Cuban cigars here.
Yeah, I'm sure you can, but not legally. But,
and it's totally stupid that we have banned Cuban cigars.
Well, okay, but you're not looking for entry into the US next week. without a cavity search.
Let's give you a get out then.
If anyone from the TSA is TSA Bob, if you're listening, I have no Cuban cigars up my arse. All right. If I've got any, they'll be on my carry on. All right.
If it's any consolation, the screening that I will go through to get from Denver to San Francisco will probably be a lot more invasive than the screening you will go through coming into the country.
Yeah, but dude, that's because you've got legalized marijuana.
There is that.
Yeah.
Let's hope that this Slashdot story is just one social thing that's gone mad. Like, did you hear the story about Warren Knight?
No, go on.
What was that?
Do you know who Warren Knight, the actor, is? Just clarify this.
No, go on.
The fat guy in Jurassic Park.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, apparently, it kind of got around through Twitter that he died in a RTA, road traffic accident. And IMDb apparently updated their systems to, you know, not commemorate him, but they have a status of actors, etc. Well, he came onto Twitter to say, actually, contrary to popular belief, I'm still here. Now,
Wayne Knight,
that's right. Now, that was either a very clever ploy by his publicist to get his name back out there, or, yeah, that social networking gone crazy and due diligence, as you mentioned earlier, required.
Doesn't get done yet. Mr. Batwitch in the chat room says, yes, but if a choice between losing customers in Australia by not putting in a backdoor or lose business across the rest of the world, if they do put one in, I don't think they will be so quick to cave in. I'm not sure I understand that. Is that a yes or a no? Jeff is especially friendly with the TSA, as we know.
That's what they say on the social networks.
They go to every time they stop him, he goes, look, do you want blood and semen? They go, no need, we've got it. Thank you.
God.
It's like you've been there.
That's not a picture I need. I hope that's not my little present, by the way, Jeff. I don't need it.
A cigar.
All right, I have to go shopping again.
You got nothing now.
I got nothing now.
Australia, come on. Come on.
Come on, guys. Right thing.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of that. Have you ever listened to 12th Man? That's going to be my cool thing. 12th Man, Billy Birmingham on iTunes. Got to get that and have a listen to it. If you're into cricket at all, 12th Man is absolutely superb. Come on. Let's pull like a team and do it my way.
One of these days, I'm going to learn anything about cricket beyond that I know that there's a game.
You could learn with Carl Swagger, because Carl Swagger has been watching the one-day stuff and the 2020 stuff, and he's getting into it. He got into rugby last year, and I kind of went through some of the rules in rugby, and he said, what should I know about rugby? I said, it's a game played by people on their feet, and that's it, mate. It's as easy as that. And he slowly got into it, and he knows it, and he's watching the cricket now, and he's getting into the cricket as well. Now, I've tried to explain the cricket to him, but it's taken a bit longer because it's got nothing to do with being on your feet. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. There's a whole load of stuff out now. There's a dot menu and a dot management have been added to the stuff, and they've got great deals on those as well. You can buy them. Now, the thing is with those dot menus, dot photography, dot on your bike things, they are a bit more expensive because of the domain host people that are flogging onto it. But don't worry. Because the thing is, if you're UK2 and if you're buying it through the British Tech Network site, use our click-through. If you type in BTN domains, whatever you've got in your basket of the new domain stuff, you'll get 20% off. So you're talking, could be like a tenner off a single domain name. If you bought the right domain name, you're getting a tenner off that by using the BTN code. BTN domains will get you loads off. VPS, VPN, co-location services, whole shed loads of other stuff. UK2 do that. And the reason you should support them is because UK2 support us. Now, we don't get paid for adverts on this network. We have no paid adverts at all. And those of you who have written in saying that it's all adverts now, no, it's not. Get a life and sod off and stop listening because I don't want your emails anymore. I don't give a shit what you think. What we're interested in is it doesn't cost us a penny now for bandwidth. So we've got all the support we need from UK2, and we sap up a £400 server every month in terms of bandwidth and storage size. Every episode that we've got, going back to the Bagel Tech days, is still on that server because they give us unlimited storage space. So UK2 basically means that you keep getting free shows. Simple as that. We get to keep going. So please support them. Please buy your stuff. Charlotte got hold of me this week, and she said, can I use the offer codes even though I'm on the network? Yeah, of course you can. Because her Digital Politico bug went down and she wanted to transfer it over to UK2. She signed up with them. She said, I've got 2 years plus the domain transfer for £58. How cool's that? There you go. See? Beautiful. Go and sign up. Use the offer codes. You'll love them to bits. And the other people to look at are Network Union. The Network Union are a BT associated business customer. They're a business partner of BT. And what they do is they've got a massive experience of wide area networks and that kind of stuff, but they've also branched out now into small and medium enterprise businesses. If you're a BT customer for business and you think, well, you know, I love the service I'm getting, that's fine. Well, that relationship's going to stay on. You're still going to get a great service. Nothing's going to change with BT. You still pay your money to BT and that's it. What you can get, though, is a bit of extra advice on your local area network and that kind of stuff from the Network Union. So go to their website through our sponsors link page and click there. Add your email in. They don't keep your email and they don't sell it on to anyone else. They just contact you one time about the services that they can offer. They explain it far better than me. If I explain it the way I understood it, they get into trouble with British Telecom, I'm sure of it. But go and support the Network Union because what they do is provide our broadband service in here so that we can send out the video shows. Again, it's another method of just reducing the cost that there is on the network for stuff. Please support them because they support us. You're going to maintain your relationship with BT. What you're going to get is an added layer of support from Network Union. Doesn't cost you a penny more, and that's it. They're brilliant. Please check them out because they're good to us. We appreciate them a lot. Thank you very much for their support. Right. Have we got any cool things? Streak, start us off, boy.
Yes, I am going in the retro zone this week. So I'm bringing up something old, and it sounds like this. If I had the sound on, at least. There we go. It is the Game Boy Advance. It is an offline game console that doesn't bother you with in-app purchases or other social commentary while you're trying to enjoy your game.
That's the original thing.
Actually, this is the slightly updated one with the back... Well, actually, this is front lit screen and the... No.
Yeah, but you can't buy it, dude.
eBay, it's great.
Oh, okay. How much?
Yeah.
You can find them for very low amounts. I mean, I've seen them, and I picked up a different model for, like, I think, was it around £10, maybe? Not much, plus a bit of the shipping. Very and good. The games are really dirt cheap. I mean, you can find some pretty decent ones for less than £5. And they last you a lot longer than any Flappy Bird can offer.
Which is gone completely now, of course.
Yeah, it's coming back.
Pick that up.
Yes, come back.
Oh dear.
With a warning that it's addictive.
No, it's not.
Go play Pac-Man instead. It'll give you more satisfaction and more anything, I think, than flapping
birds.
Well,
you probably get further as well.
Yeah, pretty much. Better music,
atrocious too. Controls. So how much did you pay for it, you say?
Well, this one I got many, many years ago, but can find them easily around like £10 at most, I would say.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah? And a fiver for the games.
Roughly. And a bit really, really good ones, and they last a heck of a lot more hours than any, at least most of the contemporary games on mobile.
See, that's the thing about classic stuff, classic in inverted commas. See, I picked Netflix the other week and have the piss taken out of me. You pick something that's 30 frigging years old, fine, no problem. Oh, God, what a cool pick that is. The chat room's gone fucking ballistic.
Okay.
I think there's a couple of them have actually shot their loads. It's just ridiculous. I picked Netflix, which is here, which is now, which is good.
But for me, Netflix is still a new thing. It just came to Sweden not long ago, so... I think that's still a very valid and good pick, so I liked it.
Okay, no, good pick, mate. Well done. Jeffrey, what do you have for us, sir?
That's kind of a hard act to follow, because...
A 1980s Game Boy is a hard act to follow. Come on, Jeff. Gamut. Gamut.
Come on.
I'm going to give you a website that is fracking awesome, and it's in the chat room right now. It is... a model of our solar system where the size of our moon is the equivalent of 1 pixel. So you can go from the edge of our sun all the way out to Pluto, and you can see what the relative distances are between each planet based on using 1 pixel as the size of our moon. And it is just really, really cool. And it has a lot of interesting little facts tucked away along the way, because there's a lot of empty space between each planet.
It's wicked.
I mean, it is really cool.
Yeah, I did a thing with Ellis a couple of years ago, and I posted the blog on our site, where he was doing the solar system at school, and they'd done it on the field with like some oranges and lemons and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, it's bigger than that, mate. And he said, well, how big is it? Okay, we've got a 10-foot swimming pool in the garden. If that was the sun, how big would Mercury be? And he held up a little circle with his hands. And I was like, no, it's the size of my fingernail. Where is it? And he said, over there in the flower bed. And I said, no, it's a kilometre away. And then we got up to Jupiter. Jupiter was a 30-centimeter frying pan. And where is it? And he said, it's Northampton, mate. It'd be down with Gaz. If it was a 10-foot swimming pool, it would be 30 centimeters down in Northampton with Gaz. And we lost it. But we finished it off. Pluto was somewhere south of Luton and was the size of my fingernail again. There is an awful lot of blackness out there.
And yet, that really puts things into perspective.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it's huge. And that's why we'll always be alone. We'll never know as a species whether there's anything out there.
I agree.
I promise you.
I hope that you're wrong.
I hope I'm wrong as well.
The spaces are so great that the likelihood of being able to find other species, and I'm certain there's life in other parts of our universe, and in other parts of our galaxy even. But whether or not we'll ever find those people...
I agree with you, Ewan, but I think there's another dimension there, and that's time. If you think about how long the dinosaurs were around, it's 160 million years, and we've been around, for about 100,000 years? I think that's another... Not only the space, but the time, lengths of time where people... You've got to stretch across these... You've got to be a Time Lord to be able to find other people, I think.
It's just simple
that
stuff.
That was almost a serious comment, wasn't it?
No, I mean, it's just...
almost.
It's just simple stuff, like you look at Beetlejuice, and Richard III was on the throne when Beetlejuice sent its light out that you're just looking at now.
Yeah.
We were looking at Jupiter the other night through a telescope with Ian Mitchell, and he said, that's amazing. He said, it's so far away. I said, well, actually, it's not, because what you're actually looking at is where Jupiter was about 70 minutes ago. because the sun's sent its light, it's 8 minutes to get to here, it's 40 minutes to get it up to Jupiter, and it's another 30 minutes to get it back, 32 minutes to get it back down to here. So that was where that was 72 minutes ago. It's actually further on now, right this very second. You're not looking at it, you're looking at the reflection of it, and that blows people's minds.
Yeah.
As well.
Cool. Good sight. Pick, I would say. Good sight.
It's a great sight. It's fantastic. It really is. And it's jaw-dropping. And we get so much heat as well. It's such a hot summer, and yet we're so far away. Just imagine if we were closer. Gaz, what have you got for us, mate?
Now, I apologise if you've had someone pick this before, but I picked it up today and only just started messing about with it. And it's this. Now, I can't show you the actual device because it's plugged in downstairs on my telly. I don't know if you can read that Chromecast. Back to front. Chromecast,
Rich Harkness was complaining his Chromecast wasn't working nice today with something. Plex, I think.
Was it? Oh, well, I might try and get Plex on there because I've got all my media in a place where I can probably get to it through Plex through the this particular app, because I have got an Apple TV. So you may think, well, why on earth did I want to get this? Well, one of the reasons is apparently this plays or you can play iPlayer through this really nicely. And we did try it. And one of the things I don't think I could do through Apple TV if I was streaming was to be able to go through AirPlay to the Apple TV with the BBC iPlayer and then go out of that app. Whereas with the Chromecast app, you go into the BBC iPlayer on the iPad, you can send it through Chromecast, and then you can go out of the app and it continues to play it and do other stuff on the iPad at the same time, which is much more useful. And the quality is pretty damn good as well. So I think it's got an open API, so there could well be lots of apps coming out for this as well. So looking forward to seeing what goes on with that. So just got it today, quite enjoying the few, or about the 30 minutes that I had to play with it. So good stuff.
Yeah, no, I've heard a couple of people have got it and they swear by it. They say it's brilliant, so.
Yeah.
And not expensive either, 35 quidish.
Well, anywhere between 20, I think about 25 and £30 you can get it for. I think it's about $35 in the US.
Brilliant. Good pick. Good pick. I'll bring you one back.
Yeah, mate. That sounds about right.
Righty, what have you got for us, mate?
Well, do you remember what your first ever tweet was?
I don't actually. Can you find out?
Well, now you can find out, because as part of Twitter's 8th, but I'll put it in the chat room as well. Part of their 8th birthday celebrations, there's a website they've set up. You can put in any publicly viewable Twitter account and it'll tell you what their first tweet was. So would you like to know what you said?
It was on 12th of November 2008. Marveling that Twitter... I put a frigging spelling mistake on my first ever tweet. Yeah. Bastard. Stayed up long enough for 1 billion tweets.
Yeah, there you go. So... I think Streak was, it's just a really interesting little website to see what most people are just going, is it working? Oh, I've signed up today. So Streak was testing, is this thing on? And that's basically what people would do. This is a great little nostalgia little website, because back in the day, people weren't really using Twitter to its best ability. But
I think I lied.
You said working on yours.
Yes, yeah. But it's like 2:57 in the afternoon, 18th of July. I bet that was a weekday. I couldn't have been working if I was doing that.
That might have been PST, though, wouldn't it? It might be Pacific time.
Yeah, one of the great ones I saw, because I thought Steve would be on tonight. I checked Steve Neighbours one, and he did one at 4:37 in the morning on the 28th of March 2008, and his tweet was sleeping. So...
Liar.
But just as a little thing, you it's really hard to go back sometimes and look at what you actually said. You can just go back and you can look at celebrities and all that sort of thing. It's just part of their birthday celebrations. You can share your tweets as well, so just put in any username and just see what the first thing people said was. It's generally people going, is this working, or I've signed up for Twitter. But just a great little bit of fun when you've got 5 minutes.
Now, I was 17 millionth person to sign up, ish, something like that. Gaz, you were a year before me, so must have a very low Twitter number.
I'm surprised.
The Twitter app used to tell you your Twitter number.
Yeah,
but it doesn't anymore.
I've got no idea what.
You'd be right up there.
Yeah,
I was pretty cool at 17 billion. But you'd be. I mean, I think Syzygy, James Hart.
Yeah,
SYZYGY. He was 7 million, something like that, and he's at 18th of March 2007. I'm joining Twitter by remote controlling my Mac with my iPack. Oh, Christ, when I should really be sleeping. I'm such a geek. Well, that says it all, doesn't it? I joined Twitter when there were still iPacks going. If you got a Twitter handle over 1 billion, then don't bother following me because I won't follow you back. I got standards, love.
Love it.
I watched Europa Report this week as well, and or last week, and I got to say I was really disappointed because that was about finding life on the squishy one, the ice ridden Europa. And thanks, mate. I just realised what I was talking about then. I thought that was a really great film. I thought they did really well with it, but they couldn't stay away from the little green men, and it just pissed me off at the end.
The ending I was disappointed in. I really enjoyed the movie all the way up to the very end.
I'd have been happy if they'd have found bacteria. That would have been fine. But no, it had to become bloody alien, didn't it? If I spoiled it for anyone, oh well. I have to call these episodes.
The xenomorph eggs hatched.
Spoiler alert as well. One film I didn't think was crap was Parkland. I watched that last night. That is the best first 20 minutes of a movie I have ever seen. Why on earth this didn't make a bigger impression at the box office, I've got no idea. But it is a brilliant movie. It's all about the people that were around the Kennedy shooting. So it looks at Abraham Zapruder. It looks at the nurses and the doctors who dealt with Kennedy when he went in. It doesn't focus on Jackie, and it doesn't focus on any of the Kennedys or any of the people that are at the center of it. It looks at the Secret Service men and all the people that are on the periphery. And it's adapted from a book about 4 days or something like that, which goes up. And it deals with the relationship of Oswald's brother with him. And everyone was saying to him, change your name. I'd move out of here if I was you. He never changed his name. He still lives in Dallas and he's still called Oswald and he's 84 years old. And it was an amazing film. I really, really enjoyed it. It's not an action thriller. It's really just that those first 20 minutes are kind of, they really encapsulate the horror of and the shock of what happened on that day. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's one of the best films I've seen this year, I have to say. So go and check it out, Parkland. It's available on iTunes and other good outlets and down at your local video store, I'm sure.
Just a quick question regarding that movie there. Did it have any likable characters in it?
It wasn't about whether you liked them or disliked them at all. It doesn't judge anything. And there's an interesting thing as well where you can kind of see where the whole conspiracy theory comes from. But it's not written as though there is a conspiracy theory. And if you actually look at things like, I mean, I've seen some drawings of the distance that Oswald shot Kennedy. And I've got to say, I probably could have made those shots. And I'm certainly no marksman. He wasn't a million miles away. It was a 40-yard-ish shot, something like that, which is nothing to someone who knows how to handle a gun. And the trees were all down. They were younger than they currently are and that kind of stuff. But it's not about that. The interesting thing is it's one of the things that comes up is where Kennedy's body's in the hospital in Parkland. And the coroner guy says, no, he's having an autopsy here. It's a murder in the state of Dallas, or in the city of Dallas. Therefore, he falls on the Dallas City Police. Therefore, I will be conducting the autopsy. You're not taking the body. And they get into a huge hullabaloo with the Secret Service men who want to get the body out. And all of that got turned into a conspiracy theory. But the way the film deals with it is just these guys who are so shocked, so upset, so hurt, so depressed by what's happened that they don't think about due process. They just want to get the body out. And that's kind of echoed again when they get to Air Force One and someone's saying the president's body's on the way, and then someone looks and says, well, where are we going to put him? He's not going in the hold like a piece of baggage. I'm not having that. And they get a saw and they cut holes in Air Force One so they can get the coffin into the main area, and they rip the seats out to get it done. And you can clearly see that, you know, that there's a lot of things that were probably done very, very badly that spurred off the conspiracy processes, but actually the film deals with them like this is the logical way this would have happened. These guys were so shocked, so hurt, so upset They were never going to leave their president behind in Dallas and fly home.
And I assume there were no random big explosions all over the movie either.
No, funny enough. No.
Yeah. And I think there we have the two main reasons why it didn't do well in the box office.
Oh, okay. Could be, perhaps. Mm. Definitely. But the other thing as well was Johnson. They said, we're going to get the president. You know, the president's dead, therefore we're going to get the president out. So we're going to get Johnson out. They put him in the records room at Parkland Hospital. And we're going to get him home. And he turned around and said, I'm not leaving without that woman, as in Jackie Onassis, Kennedy, rather. So he was kind of like a bit of a good guy in that. And everyone's saying, oh, you know, it's amazing how they all left together. Why didn't they just look after the president first and then deal with leave the dead body and Jackie alone? Because he was a good guy. You know, that's the stuff where all the... It's brilliant. It's a really good film. I really, really enjoyed it. I spoke way too much about it. I don't want to give any plot. Well, he dies. What can I say?
Oh, now you ruined it for me.
Shit.
Oh,
shit.
Well, that sounds good. I have to check that out, I think.
Where can we get a hold of you, Streak?
Well, like I kind of alluded to in the early part of the show, streakmachine.com. We'll be putting up a little bit more information about what is to come on next week.
Make sure you send me a link and I shall post it out tomorrow for you, mate. Will do. Please buy Streak's book.
Jeff, I don't mind if you do.
Where can we get you, mate?
Well, you can find me over at macobserver.com, and you can find me on a bunch of podcasts here and around the world. And you can find me on Twitter at jgamut. And you can also find me at my personal blog where I talk about coffee shops and the stupid things that I see people do, freshbrewtales.com.
Cheers, mate. Gaz, where are you, sir?
Nice and easy. Gazmaz on Twitters, gazmaz.com will point to lots of the podcasts that I regularly attend. But the weekly one, which is now at $4.99, is the My Mac podcast, where I do, I co-host with a guy called Guy Searle, who I think you are meeting up with over in a certain California.
Yeah. $4.99, you charge for it?
So, what for? Sorry?
You said the My Mac podcast is $4.99.
Yeah, we're at number 499. Sorry. No, we don't charge for it. We're at number 499. So one more before a big 500.
Woo!
Yeah.
Celebrity episode.
And, possibly.
Paul, where are you, sir?
As always, on Twitter at Paulums and lurking around the old BritishSetNetwork.com.
Batworks wants to know if I finish my Minecraft Titanic. You're having a laugh, mate. I'll show you where I'm up to after the podcast. I'll show you on the live feed. It's quite impressive, but it is actually full size. It's full size and it's huge. My name's Euranking. Get me at Euranking on Twitter. I'll be speaking at Macworld next week on Friday. We'll be doing two live shows. The first one is going to be the walk around the show floor, which will be the normal time of big, and then we'll try and get out another one when we do the one on the stand, but that's going to be kind of like 11:30, I think, that goes out. So, but Jeff will be at that, and Don will be there, and Adam will be there, and Paul will be there, and I'll be there, and other people will be there. Chuck John is joining us as well, I think. So we'll have a good time. And then on Saturday, Paul Wheatley is talking. He's picked up a session on prototyping for the iPad as well. So if you come into the show, do come and say hello. And me and all the... Yeah, apparently I'm going to Macworld. I hadn't said much. We'll have a beer. And there's loads of drinking. I've got a party every night and I haven't booked any of them. See you next week. Thanks for listening.